This is episode 159 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. What is sepsis and septic shock?
The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith.
Hello out there. Welcome back to the podcast. Thank you for joining us. We are going to have a very quick episode about sepsis and septic shock. But before we get into the content, please like and subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts from, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or whatever that is, Pound Puppies, whatever, wherever you get your podcasts, please be sure to like and subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to leave a comment. Let us know how we're doing. If you have any suggestions for content, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you. With that, let's get into it. So sepsis continues to be in the top 10 for leading cause of death in both Americans overall as well as Georgians. And one of the top 10 or higher causes of death for our nursing home resident population. We have gone into some depth on sepsis in previous episodes. If you want to check those out as well, episode 79, we had Dr. Imrana Malik talking about how to prevent sepsis in Georgia nursing homes. And then we had Richard Mollett in episode 143, just talking about general infection control protocols in nursing homes. So the one of the main takeaways for this episode is that it's the idea that sepsis really isn't an infection in itself. Sepsis is the body's reaction to an infection. So oftentimes a nursing home resident will start off with some type of localized infection. So pneumonia, a UTI, perhaps some type of infection due to a wound, like a pressure ulcer. It's very common that there's a infection and bacteria located in a wound. So what happens is that the body essentially overreacts, so to speak, more or less, to that localized infection. And what's interesting is that despite being one of the leading killers of Americans, and particularly nursing home residents, we're actually still learning about sepsis and septic shock. It's not something that we have, come to grips with or have, the most amount of data and, techniques, which, is surprising, but that's how it works. But sepsis and septic shock, again, is a reaction to infection, and we kind of view it, we rate it on a scale. So at the beginning of the progress of sepsis, you have what's called SIRS, which is systematic inflammatory response syndrome. This is basically the first stage in the progression of the illness. That's where the body begins to become inflamed, like the tissues in the area of the infection become inflamed and start reacting to the actual initial infection. Then we get into what we are categorizing as sepsis. The individual continues on their progression to becoming inflamed in that local area, and the body begins to react to it more. And this is the point where we say that the person has become septic. Then on the scale, we have what's called severe sepsis. Severe sepsis is where we have inflammation, and now we have problems with blood circulation. And at this point, you begin to see problems with organ function. the final stage of the spectrum, on the spectrum, is septic shock. And this is where the body has now completely begun to shut down. Organ failure is quite common with septic shock. In fact, if you've made it to septic shock on the scale, then the mortality rate skyrockets. At this point, I believe it's still something like 50% mortality rate for people suffering from septic shock. So it's not just, you know, sepsis or not sepsis. There's kind of a spectrum ranging from SIRS all the way to septic shock. And where you are in that spectrum will depend on how inflamed and how much of response your body is giving to that infection. So again, sepsis occurs in nursing homes most often, at least in my anecdotal research and my experience as a nursing home lawyer. Sepsis and septic shock occurs as a result of pneumonia, UTI, and pressure ulcer infections. Those are going to be the main drivers of whether or not somebody is getting sepsis. To a lesser degree, other infections can do it as well. So MRSA can be the cause, gram-negative bacilli. But again, it's most often that trinity of pneumonia, UTI, and pressure ulcers. Why is that so? I don't have an answer for that. Perhaps it's these three infections are more common than others. I don't know, but that's, from what I see, that's typically what's causing people to get to the emergency room is one of those three. How can nursing homes prevent sepsis and septic shock in nursing home residents? I will not get into infection control protocols. Like I said, Richard Mollett talked about that with us in episode 143. We talked about infections in episode 98 as well, on preventing infections. But, you know, of the several buckets we can talk about in terms of preventing sepsis, in doing reasonable actions, taking reasonable actions to prevent infections to begin with, is going to be the primary way that we can prevent sepsis in nursing homes. Federal regulations require infection control protocols, so having a hand hygiene policy in place so staff knows when and how often and under what circumstances to wear PPE or to wash their hands, clean equipment, how often to clean equipment, just basic common sense things to prevent infection. And the preventing infections, which is how sepsis starts, as a reaction to the infection, that can obviously go a long way to prevent sepsis. But setting aside infection control protocols as a way to prevent sepsis, one of the principal ways, the main way that a nursing home can prevent sepsis or septic shock from killing a resident is for the nursing home to train staff on the signs and symptoms of septic shock, the signs and symptoms along that spectrum from SIRS all the way to septic shock. So if a resident has already have a history of infection, then they should be in a category of let's watch out for this. Because essentially we know that a resident is entering that first stage of sepsis, SIRS, the systematic inflammatory response syndrome, if there has been in the past a UTI, pneumonia, you know, pressure ulcer wound, some type of previous infection or suspected infection, along with two other symptoms. And those symptoms are altered mental state, lowered blood pressure, or rapid breathing. And altered mental status just means if the resident is uncharacteristically lethargic, if they're acting confused, if there's some type of loss of capacity that is not baseline for that resident. So again, if you've got either a previous or suspected infection, and then you have at least two of these symptoms, altered mental status, lowered blood pressure, or rapid breathing, then you are considered to be in that, at least that first stage of sepsis, and therefore sepsis protocols should be taken by that nursing home. So sepsis protocols at minimum are going to be alerting the primary care physician or alerting the attending physician. You know, Dr. Smith, we've observed, you know, Mrs. Johnson, you know, since early this morning has, you know, not been talking as much. She's kind of staring off into space, which is not baseline for her. And remember that she's, you know, we're treating her for UTI. So then, you know, that's the first step, alerting that physician so the physician can, you know, fax in or telephone in orders. The next thing is, and again, the orders will probably run labs, but the next thing to do is to run labs. So you're testing for infection, trying to get that under control, finding out what's going on. You begin to document all systems. So the nursing home staff should take all vitals, respiration, blood pressure, heart rate, these type of things. And then if it appears that the resident is continuing on that spectrum, then you send the resident out for more stringent sepsis protocols at an acute care hospital. So again, the main thing is training staff to be observant of the signs and symptoms, the early signs and symptoms of sepsis is going to do the most help in preventing severe injury from sepsis. So can you sue a nursing home for death or severe injury from sepsis? The answer is yes. Typically, we see these cases kind of divided. So in a couple of categories. The first category is oftentimes the negligence or the breach of the standard of care or the reason why the lawsuit should be brought is from the infection to begin with. So did the nursing home do all they could under standards of practice, under federal regulations to prevent a bed sore, for example? And if they didn't, then they're responsible for the resulting complications from that bed sore, which includes sepsis. So in that one bucket, you've got, okay, well, they were negligent in causing the underlying infection anyway. Sometimes you have residents that you could do whatever you could follow all the protocols, which is assessing the resident, developing a care plan based on that assessment, and revising that care plan as needed, and the resident would still develop a UTI. So situations in which the nursing home is quote unquote doing everything it can and the infection is unavoidable and still occurs, there still can be a case if that infection leads to sepsis if the nursing home did not follow the standard of care with regard to observing the signs of sepsis and treating it quickly. So that's the second bucket we see in these sepsis cases, is though even though the infection is not the quote unquote fault of the nursing home, you know, missed the fact that Miss Johnson's mental status had fallen and that she's been, you know, had a UTI or pneumonia. These cases are sometimes not as cut and dried, not as simple as other cases like falls. And the reason is because, you know, the body works sometimes in mysterious ways, and you're dealing with an internal injury, an internal disease that's a result of an infection. Unlike a fall where you can say, well, she didn't have a broken elbow before she rolled out of bed and hit the ground. That's kind of a more easier causal connection between the incident, which is the fall, and the injury, which is a broken elbow. With sepsis, you're dealing with a whole lot of, you know, moving parts within the body, and whether or not the nursing home, if they would have done what they should have done, whether or not it would have happened anyway. Not to say these cases are impossible. We take on sepsis cases all the time, but that's the main thing, is that if the nursing home failed to properly prevent the infection or failed to observe the signs and symptoms of sepsis in time, and in fact, because of those breaches of the standard of care, the nursing home, or because of those breaches of the standard of care, the resident in fact developed sepsis and septic shock and was injured, then there is a case, absolutely. And as we've discussed in other episodes, the damages from these type of cases will depend on the severity of the injury. But again, at the end of the day, like I said, sepsis itself is not an infection. It's the body's reaction to an infection. We're still learning a lot. Unfortunately, this illness is causing a lot of death in this country. We've got a lot to learn about it. But I just want to make everybody aware of it, because this is not something that's, I feel like it's not something that's known. Like, it's not, I have a 78-year-old mother that I tell her, you know, when she had pneumonia, and I said, okay, well, it's, you know, obviously she lives with my sister and my nieces and nephews. And I said, okay, we got to watch for these signs. Like, mom, you got to take your temperature. You got to make sure that, you know, you tell my nieces and nephews to watch out in case you're not filling up to it one day, because these could be the initial signs of sepsis. But she had no idea. She had never heard of sepsis before. It's just not something that is common knowledge. And that's kind of the point of this episode, is I just want to get this out there into the ether to educate people on this condition. But if you found this episode informative, please like and subscribe. Be sure to reach out to us if you have some type of subject matter that you would like us to address. If you have a loved one in a nursing home and maybe they're doing X, Y, and Z and you want us to talk about that, we're more than happy to. Reach out to us. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast comes out every other Monday. You can find us on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts from. And with that, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.